It's Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Teich. The gas crisis of the 1970s led many Americans to start valuing fuel efficiency and led automakers to respond. Lots of things were tried, smaller engines, smaller cars, turbos, the gear known as overdrive. But when gas prices dropped again in the 90s, cars and SUVs got bigger again. Now that gas prices above $3 are probably here to stay, car companies, consumers, and the government are again looking at fuel efficiency. And some previously tried ideas are back on the table in addition to some new ones. Lake Effect auto contributor Mark Savage talked with our Dan Harmon about some of these fuel-saving strategies, including the continuously variable transmission, also known as CVT.
These have been around for a long time. Think of it as like kind of a pulley system with a belt that is, as they say, continuously variable. You don't have, in most cars, you'd have 4, 5, 6, 7 gears depending on the kind of car you have and the transmission you have. And those gear ratios are set because there's actual gears that are certain sizes that they have to mesh up with. But with a CVT, it's this belt and pulley system that's working together basically, and it can be anything it wants to be. It adjusts as it goes. So if you accelerate hard, it adjusts one way and gives you more power, more torque. And if you, want to take it easy and just cruise, it's going to shift in a totally different way. And they're pretty much seamless. You don't feel much in the way of the car. And coming from my snowmobile background that I also have, think of that as the way all snowmobiles are powered basically with a CVT. They've got two pulleys and a belt. And when you're the more you press the throttle, the faster the belt goes and the faster the snowmobile goes. Well, it's similar in cars, but what this does is it can be as efficient as it can possibly be. It chooses the ratio, unlike a regular car that might pick third gear or fourth gear, and it can't pick in between. This can go in between if that's what's the most efficient.
Was the intent of it always better efficiency, or was it like just less moving parts, even though it's still a pretty sophisticated piece of equipment?
Right. It is less moving parts. You don't have not all of them have a clutch. There are some that have adjustable devices there. But, so there's fewer moving parts and it's smoother and it can be more efficient. So it has, kind of a triple threat in that regard. Plus, if it saves another part or two and that saves a pound or two, that helps make your car more efficient too.
Which all sounds great. And then here comes the but.
But, right. There are a lot of different CVTs out there. And I would advise anybody who is looking for something like this because they want to save fuel and it is quiet and efficient and smooth is to try any car that you're going to want to buy, test drive the one with CVT and make sure you're happy with the way it works. Because frequently when a car has a lower amount of power, a smaller engine to begin with, these don't seem to always mesh up quite as well. And it's not, I don't think, that they aren't shifting as well. It's that you just don't have the power and you can creep away from a stoplight. And I mean creep. I mean, you feel like you're – I've been in cars where I felt like I was going to get run over by the guy behind me because they're not expecting you to start off as slowly as you do. Now, once you get up to 20 or 30 mile an hour, then, everything kind of goes back to normal.
Yeah. That's – one complaint is power, and I've also heard that they're just – not necessarily noisy per se, but the drone. There's a kind of a drone that accompanies it because the engine's always working at a certain RPM. And
right.
That's not what you're used to anyway.
Right. You do find that especially under heavy acceleration with a CVT, a lot of the engines and, working together with the CVT are pretty noisy. I just had a Honda Fit recently and, man, when you put down the pedal on that thing, it was – I thought to myself, this is like I turned the garbage disposal on at home. You can hear that. It's that much groaning and noise, and it's a little disturbing.
Is that going to be part of your printed review?
I think I said that it had a little groan or drone to it. I forget what wording I said. But all I can say is, this has its point, and it's a good thing. My wife has a Subaru Forester with a CVT. It has plenty of pep. It gets up and go. Nissan seems to have mastered it. Most of their cars have good acceleration. So, just check it out when you go out and drive a car.
Audi seems to have done a good job with the four-cylinder turbo. It just gives it that extra bit of power, I think, that it needs.
Right. And we were talking today about how car companies are saving fuel economy, and turbos are another way. What a lot of car companies have done is downsize the engine. They've gone from a V8 to a V6 or from a V6 to an I4. And while that cuts the power, many of them have added a turbo to it so that you know, 90% of the time you're not going to need that turbo. You're going to be cruising along at a steady rate of speed or a modest speed. But if you're accelerating hard or you're pulling away from a stoplight or you're getting onto a highway and you need the power, then you accelerate, then the turbo kicks in, and for 8 seconds, your engine is not terribly fuel efficient, but the rest of the time, it is. So again, that saves a little on the fuel economy.
And I just find this interesting that this was tried in a kind of a larger scale way in the 80s, you know, after the first big gas crisis and the need for efficiency. American auto buyers didn't really like the idea. It was people still wanted V8s and V6 engines, and not many people bought turbos. It was tried. So what's happened in the meantime to make it a little more palatable?
Well, I just think that the, you know, people change and our expectations change over time. And probably that we've hit $4 a gallon a couple of times and toyed with really, really high gas prices, that has made some people decide that the next time around they're happy to have something a little more efficient. And it may be that as our car culture is changing, we're not as car crazy as we used to be as far as not needing only power. There's certainly cars out there that have plenty of power. But on a daily drive when you're, you know, commuting to the office, if you're on the highway for 10 miles and in the city for 2 or 3 miles, you only need a certain amount of power. And you realize that after a while. You think, well, why am I buying this big V8 engine when I can have a V6 turbo or I can have an I4 turbo? And when I'm getting on the highway, if I want to, as my dad used to say, let the shaft out and go, you know, you can do that. But then you back off and you cruise at 60, 65 mile an hour out there and it's all easy.
Have turbos really proven to be efficient enough to become a mass market item? Or, I mean, what's the actual gain in mileage?
They really have. I think you're seeing somewhere between a 25 and 30% increase in your fuel economy using the turbos because, again, most of the time you're not using the turbo. So you're running a four-cylinder engine more efficiently than that six was running before. And, you know, the turbo is just kicking in occasionally. So a lot of the car makers, Ford has done a good job of this with their EcoBoost engine that they've used in many, many of their cars. In fact, the Fusion right now only has four-cylinder engines available in it, plus a hybrid and a plug-in hybrid. So I think that's what you're seeing. You see the car companies move to that because they know it's more efficient and people get used to it and they can give you the power when they want it. And the other thing I might add about getting smaller engines in the cars is I think I read that the a V6 versus the I4 engine and with a turbo on it, it's about a 25-pound savings. So again, savings weight helps you get better fuel economy, plus the engine itself is a more efficient engine. So a couple of ways you can go there.
Well, and speaking of weight, a lot of advancements in technology and weight-saving strategies. And has that really helped, or is this now being balanced, if you will, by all the heavy required equipment that now cars come with?
Well, over the last, I'd say, 10 or 15 years, we have seen so many more pieces of equipment put on the cars, especially electronics and, well, probably things that we considered luxuries a while back but now are more standard. So you've added some weight there, power seats, things like that. You got to have those little motors to help power them back and forth and tilt them every which way and have the lumbar support do what you want it to do. But now more of the car companies are using aluminum and other blended metals to save weight. I know Audi started this years ago with the hoods of their cars and with the roofs of their cars. But, it's worked its way down into more mainstream cars. I know the most recent Nissan Pathfinder, I think came out in 13, they cut about 400 and some pounds of weight out of it by using more aluminum in it. And now the Ford F-150, the most popular vehicle, the most sold vehicle in the nation, they are cutting over, I think it's 800, 700 and some pounds out of the next version of that because they're using an all-aluminum body. You know, it's a little tougher to bend and form that aluminum, and it will be a little tougher, I think, for repair people to work on that. But it does save a lot of weight, and a massive truck like that, if you can save 700 to 800 pounds, that is definitely going to improve your fuel economy. I think I was reading too that the Pathfinder, when they cut that 400 pounds or so, they boosted the fuel economy by about 30%. So And there, that one that was going from a truck chassis to more of a unibody construction that cars have or crossovers, and that's more of a crossover-type vehicle now, so makes it a little bit different.
So are we still seeing overall a reduction in vehicle weight, even though the more airbags you put in, the more it weighs, and you mentioned all the motors, and steel reinforced or maybe aluminum reinforced crash zones, is there still an overall weight loss, or are we kind of even?
Well, I think it depends on the car and the make, because if a car is an older life cycle, like it maybe is fourth or fifth year out, you know, it may be still heavier than the previous model. Now, anything that's coming out last year, this year, probably the next 2 or 3 years, I'm betting you're going to see a pretty good couple hundred pound weight loss because of all of the use of the aluminum and other metals. So and if you're putting a smaller engine in, and if you're putting a CVT in, and that saves some weight and some parts there, you're losing 5 here, 10 there, and pretty soon you've lost 25 to 100 pounds. And every pound adds up. Just a note to people out there, if you're driving around with a lot of junk in your trunk, don't do that. That's weight. That we always say, what can you do to actually get better gas mileage without changing anything? Well, how many car seats do you have in there that you aren't using? How many extra things do you have in a trunk that you're just carrying around with you? Get that stuff. Get out your junk in the trunk.
All right. And we haven't talked about hybrid, and that's become very mainstream. Is that going to become even more popular, or have we reached a kind of a point where it is where it is?
I think you'll see more hybrids year after year. I can't imagine that in the next 5 years, almost every car won't have a hybrid system available in it. You're seeing it now, things such as the Fusion I mentioned earlier, that were designed to be a car with a normal gas engine in it, and then they've also put the hybrid system in. And the hybrids, how they're helping us is that you're using that electric power from the batteries when you're first starting the car and first starting from a stop. And that's where your engine is least efficient. You're putting the most strain on that engine, so it's using the most gasoline. Once you're up to 20 or 30 mile an hour and it switches over to the gas power, that's when that engine is more efficient. And I hate to say it, I told you so, but I think about 5 or 6 years ago we talked about, well, hybrids, what are they going to do? And I said, it's the way to go, because this is the halfway step between gas-powered engines and all-electric vehicles. Well, now we're seeing some all-electric vehicles come out. That's great. They have limited range. We can't drive them to Chicago and back in the same day, generally speaking. So they become of limited use. They're nice commuter cars. That will change. I'm sure that the technology will improve there. But in the meantime, you can drop a hybrid system into almost any vehicle that's out there. It adds a little more weight because of the batteries. But over a lifetime of a car, you're going to get better fuel economy because you're upping it by 30 or 40% and using your gas engine when it's the most efficient. So hybrids are going to grow. I don't see them going away for a long time.
All right. Something that I'm surprised it hasn't happened more, or there aren't more options or plug-in hybrids where you actually charge it and you get maybe 20, 30 miles of just electric before the hybrid kicks in.
Right. The last couple, I've had a couple of the plug-in hybrids and I've had one just true, plug-in electric, the Nissan Leaf. And with the Leaf, it said I was getting 85, 90 miles for the charge. So that's great. That makes it very useful. The others, it's mostly somewhere between 15 and 20 to 25 miles. If I've got a 12-mile trip to the office, so in theory, if I got a 22 to 24-mile charge, I can just about do it on every day and not use gas, just plug in the vehicle. And if I have to run an errand or two, maybe you're using the gas part just for the last 2 or 3 miles. So I think, again, you'll see more of those. That adds a little more cost, and I think just that puts people off a little bit more. But, everything like this is we're adapting. As users, we're adapting all the time, and as they provide us more plug-ins, we'll probably be buying more plug-ins.
Something that we haven't mentioned is start-stop technology, which is not related to hybrids necessarily. I mean, it came from the hybrid, but this is just for regular engines.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah, and the engine will shut off at a stoplight. From what I'm reading, owners don't necessarily like it. A lot of companies, you can actually have that shut off and just let your car run. So,
well, case in point, start stop. I a lot of the cars I've had lately have had the start-stop, and it's mostly the luxury cars and the cars with the bigger engines, because this is going to save, you know, maybe 5% or, I don't know, maybe 10%, because at every stoplight you sit out, the engine shuts off entirely, then restarts when you let your take your foot off the brake. It can be disconcerting. I am driving a Jaguar right now, an F-Type. It has start-stop technology. You pull up to the stoplight, it turns itself off. And as one of my buddies said, if I'm spending this kind of money on a car with an engine that sounds this great, I want to hear it when I'm sitting at the stoplight. And I think there will be some kickback on some of that. People will not necessarily like that. But again, it is another technology that does save some fuel.
Okay. Thanks, Mark, for coming on.
Thanks.
Lake Effect contributor Mark Savage is the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's auto writer and associate publisher for four magazines at Waukesha's Kalmbach, American Snowmobiler, Classic Toy Trains, Fine Scale Modeler, and Scale Auto Magazine. He spoke with Dan Harmon. Why Boulevard Theater is now living a nomadic existence when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.